Today is a day for truth. This sermon has been the most difficult I have ever prepared. I struggled with it every day this week. And yet I did not, in my first through my fourth version, truly say what has been on my heart, especially this week. I do take comfort in knowing that many other clergy are using these same passages today as they prepare for their sermons. Many others are wrestling with what to say and how to say it, especially after the events over the last 2 weeks. Many of these are pastors and associate pastors of their churches, and I wondered and prayed if I even have the right to say what I feel compelled to say today, because I am not the pastor. So let me reassure Kevin and all of you, I am not a fire and brimstone preacher, I promise. But my background before God's call to me in ministry was politics. I worked first for U.S. Senator John Tower of Texas in both his Dallas and D.C. offices. I also worked for the state legislature for many years and for campaigns. Basically, for 18 plus years, I worked in government and politics, so I do know from where I speak in part of what the sermon will include today. I am a chaplain. I am an ordained minister to the gospel, ordained 5 years ago by the members of Calvary Baptist Church in Roanoke, Virginia. I was trained to preach the good news of Jesus Christ, and I was also trained, in my opinion, by one of the very best preachers, Baptist preachers, the Reverend Dr. Roger Painter, who encouraged us in our homiletics class to speak the truth to power while at the seminary. Roger told us that there would be weeks, like this one, when we had to preach from the pulpit what was going on during the week and not ignore them or speak obliquely about them. And I have to confess, that obliqueness, that was my first sermon, versions 1 through 4. This sermon may be considered as a call to action by good Christians, by all people. We are in a time right now where we are needed. We are needed to speak out on the goodness of what Jesus preached. The two most important commandments he left us with, to love God and to love each other. These passages, the one that Alana read from Exodus, regarding relationships in a family, and the one that was just read regarding Jesus' discussion with the disciples and the Pharisees, are the ones that we're going to talk about today. They're especially relevant. Matthew's passage describes how powerful Jesus' religious leaders, Jewish religious leaders, attempt to discredit Jesus. They criticize Jesus and the disciples for not observing the Jewish purity laws. And instead, Jesus points out that these laws are not what truly reflect as purity and impurity. Jesus explains that purity comes from the heart and reflects what is there inside us. Jesus emphasizes that our words and actions that come out of our mouths are from our heart, and that is what should be pure. The disciples warned Jesus that the religious leaders took offense at what he said in relation to the purity laws, and he tries again to explain. It is what comes out of the mouth, what proceeds from the heart, And this is what defiles. For out of the mouth comes evil intentions. Jesus is upsetting the leaders by explaining that their religious laws are not what relates to purity. Centering in this conversation in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus speaks to the children. Throughout the entire Gospel of Matthew, Jesus speaks of children. And this gospel is where, again, it is timely today for our children who are returning to school and our blessing of their backpacks. My heart hurts almost every time I turn on the television these days. Last week, I was totally overwhelmed by watching the march on the University of Virginia campus in Charlottesville. The scene that stays with me in horror is the nighttime march with the lit torches held by the Ku Klux Klan, the neo-Nazi proponents, the white supremacists, the white nationalists, mostly young men, white, some young women, as they chanted, "You will not replace us." And alternating that chant with, "Jews will not replace us." I felt like I was watching evil. I checked on many of my Virginia clergy colleagues and other friends back in the Roanoke area, especially those who are really outspoken and very active in social justice, to make sure they were not among those who had been injured. Many wanted to be there in person to stand up for our Jewish and Black sisters and brothers who were being obscenely denigrated. That nighttime scene still turns my stomach. I thought those days were gone. I was a senior in Bryan Adams High School in 1971 when our public schools were first integrated in Dallas. Black schools were closed. Students were bused to prominently white schools. Armed police met students at the entrances. To say life school, our school life was chaotic, was definitely an understatement. But we had amazing teachers and administrators, and a principal. The entire staff had incredibly great courage. There were many discussions of, would there be a Black homecoming? Would there be a white homecoming? What about our school prom? Our sociology and psychology teachers, assisted by our counselors, moderated healthy conversations between all the races in all of our classrooms that rocked all of our worlds of what we previously had believed as truths. White students learned of horrendous rat-infested school buildings the Black students had left behind. And in their classrooms, the books were so outdated, they were not even relevant. All of their schools were within a 15-minute walk from their homes, and now they would spend each day at least 3 hours a day commuting by bus. Each of us knew we were a part of changing our history that year, and our world would not be like anything we knew before. We didn't learn a whole lot that year from our school books. We did learn a whole lot about what we had been taught to practice in our individual church homes. We were Catholics, Methodists, Baptist. We were Jewish, Church of Christ, and many, many others. We prayed together out loud in class for peace and safety when outsiders threw rocks at the windows of our classroom. Where one of the few Black women teachers that had been transferred to our school taught her first racially mixed class. When I lived in D.C. during the late 70s and 80s, there was a cross burning in Maryland. I was horrified. And still, good people had strong, powerful conversations. When I worked for the U.S. Senator John Tower, both in Dallas and his D.C. offices, people of both parties worked together then. It wasn't perfect, but they worked together in peace. Democrats and Republicans also worked together without the constant sniping that we now see on the Hill. And we were far more productive. We had no idea how much that would change, especially now. When I worked in our state capitol, Republicans and Democrats worked together, often with the best of intentions, again, not perfect, but always with the mantra of God bless Texas. That was under Lieutenant Governor Bob Bullock at that time. I'm showing my age. It too was a different time. And still, we have hope for the beginnings of good conversations. This week, like never before, good people in many leadership positions across this country spoke out publicly against hate, against racism, against bigotry. Blacks and whites and browns and Jews and Muslims and Christians are speaking out on major networks this week, and they're working hard to have conversations where each person is listened to with respect. It's still not perfect, but there is a shift for the better. As Christians, we are called to do the same, and it is time to call out bigotry, racism, and intolerance for what it is. It's evil. I told you that I did a rewrite. This goes back to the original part of the sermon. Angels. You know angels, those winged creatures that we see in books and magazines? Angels in ancient scriptures are sometimes named Michael, the archangel, Gabriel, Uriel, and many more. The belief in angels or a similar spirit being are what Christian, Muslim, Jews, I'm hoping I'm going to say this right, Zoroastrianism, Sikh, and Baha'i all share a belief in angels. Native Americans believe we have spirit guides, including an animal guide, through our life's journeys. And many traditions believe that our Creator brings certain beings into our lives, especially when we are in great need or when we ask for help. And in times of great stress, every faith uses several forms of silent meditation, soft music, prayer, or a mantra to calm our anxieties, to slow down our racing thoughts in our minds. As a child brought up in the Christian faith, I was taught by Irish nuns the guardian angel's prayer. And from then on, as a child, anytime I needed help to deal with a problem, all I had to do was say this prayer. I know God sends a protector just for me, no matter what situation I'm in. When you are afraid and you know you need to speak up to hate, pray. Ask for help from God, from Jesus, from guardian angels, spirit guides. Listen to the response of peace and strength that will fill you and will speak the truth of Jesus' love to power. It will change the conversation. These conversations will rock our world. children, we learn how to say please and thank you when we ask for something. We learn as children to ask God for things important in our lives and to thank God for the blessings we are given. Prayers can be long and winded. Prayers can be short and direct. Meal blessings are a favorite in our home. We've learned in some of our conversations with our grandchildren, Warren, age 8, and Caitlin, age 11, that some of the simplest prayers are the best. And one of my favorite prayers is our grandson Warren's mealtime blessing that often goes something like this. When I first heard it, this conversation of his with God rocked my world. He said, "Thank you, God, for chocolate milk, for spaghetti, for pets, and for fun times with our family." Jesus does a lot of talking in the Gospel of Matthew with children. Biblical scholar Joseph Grassi from the Anchor Dictionary writes that discussions of children in Matthew's Gospel and notes a frequency of Jesus naming children in some of the central gospel themes. One is, "This child will be the hope of the Gentile world, as illustrated by the Magi's journey, guided by God through a star and by dreams." Jesus also highlights in Matthew the importance of little ones and declares, "Each has a special guardian angel assigned to them by God." Matthew 18:10. In the musical South Pacific in 1949, it was composed by Richard Rodgers. Lyrics were by Oscar Hammerstein II. Part of the musical included the message of racism, and the lyrics from the song, "You've Got to Be Carefully Taught," emphasized how prejudice is taught at an early age, and includes the lines, "You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you were 6 or 7 or 8. Each of us has power. There's no exception. Little ones all the way up. We make choices of how we speak and the tone of voice we use. It just struck me, I'm not sure if I read the last part of the passage from today's Matthew Gospel. It's a story of a Canaanite woman who persists with Jesus. Biblical scholar and writer Elaine Wainwright gives the Canaanite woman the name of Justa. She says, Elaine does, she does this because unnamed characters tend to be forgotten more easily than those who have been given names, and the naming of women characters, especially when naming, belongs within the Christian tradition. It can assist in bringing them to the center of the Christian part of remembering the stories. Justa is a mother who is desperate. Her daughter has demons, and she is determined that Jesus will hear her voice. The disciples discourage her and discourage Jesus from having a conversation with her. Jesus ignores her. But Justa's daughter's mom is not going to give up. Justa knows Jesus is a great healer, and at first she shouts at him. Her shouting does not move him. But Justa does not allow Jesus to silence her with his silence, and he finally answers her, saying, "I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Justa, though, speaks her truth to the power of Jesus in another way so he can understand. She addresses him as Lord and goes down on her knees before him and says, Lord, help me. Jesus listens and responds, it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs. Jesus uses the word children to mean Jews and the word dogs to mean Gentiles. She still persists and uses his words this time to convince Jesus of looking at the situation from a totally different perspective, one of equality, or at least as close as she can get him to alter his belief. When she says, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's tables, I wonder if in that moment Jesus sees a much larger picture than before, that just as conversation with him shows his ministry to be far more inclusive than he had thought. It's going beyond the Jewish community. And he answers her, woman, great is your faith, let it be done as you wish. We are told that instantly Jesus' daughter is healed. This was a conversation that rocked their world, definitely for Jesta and her daughter, also for Jesus and the disciples, because from this story forward, we learn Jesus' preaching and work expands to everyone, not just Jews. So in conclusion today, which conversation will rock our world? Today, consider making a decision and a difference in speaking out with the love of God, and remember to listen from your heart.